Welcome to the deep dive. We're here to extract the key knowledge from your sources, getting you quickly up to speed.
That's the goal.
Today, we're looking at someone really fascinating, the 14th Dalai Lama, Tenzin Gyatso. There's this paradox, isn't there? He calls himself a simple Buddhist monk, but he's, you know, a global figure, Nobel laureate, symbol of peace.
Absolutely, a huge presence on the world stage.
So our mission today is to unpack that. How does a life starting in, well, a tiny Tibetan village lead to becoming a spiritual guide for so many worldwide? We want to pull out the key facts, the core wisdom.
And it's quite a journey. He lost his country, tragically, but gained this incredible global platform.
Right. Becoming a kind of bridge, you could say, between ancient wisdom and modern science, maybe. East and rest.
Exactly that. A bridge builder.
So let's dive into how this extraordinary life even began. It wasn't exactly typical.
No, definitely not. It starts with this concept of tulkas. Right. Reincarnations of enlightened beings. In his case, Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva of compassion. Embodied compassion, essentially.
Okay.
So after the 13th Dalai Lama died, there were, well, mystical signs. His head apparently turned northeast after passing. A regent had a vision in a sacred lake, Lamoilatso.
A vision? What kind of vision?
Letters appeared. Ah, ka, ma. He saw a monastery, specific details like a turquoise roof, a house with unusual guttering. This led the search party.
Wow. And they found him.
They found a 2-year-old boy, Lamo Dondup. And here's the really surprising part. This toddler correctly identified personal items belonging to the previous Dalai Lama. Things like spectacles, a prayer bead mala.
At 2 years old. That's incredible. So this mystical start, how did it set him up for, well, the unbelievable responsibility that came so quickly?
Well, the preparation was immediate and intense. He began this rigorous traditional Nalanda education, very focused on logic, philosophy.
Nalanda, it's the ancient Indian university tradition.
Exactly. Deep philosophical training. He eventually earned his Geshe Larampa degree, which is like the highest doctorate in Buddhist philosophy, at 23. And what's key here, I think, is how this grounding in logic really laid the foundation for his later engagement with science.
Interesting. But life intervened, didn't it? Politics came crashing in.
It did. Even before finishing his studies, boom, the Chinese invasion happened in 1950. He was forced to take on full political power, head of state, at just 15 years old.
15. That's unimaginable pressure for a teenager. Still a spiritual leader in training, now thrust into this geopolitical crisis. How did he even handle that?
It led to an absolutely critical life-changing moment. 1959, the Tibetan National Uprising was brutally crushed by the Chinese forces.
Right.
The state oracle, the Nechung Oracle, who was consulted for guidance, gave a very stark command.
Oh, was it?
Just two words. Leave now. So he made this incredibly dangerous escape over the Himalayas into exile in India. But he didn't just, you know, disappear. In Dharamsala, he established a democratic government in exile. Built it from the ground up.
And that culminated in something quite historic later on.
Absolutely. In 2011, he made a remarkable decision. He formally devolved all his political authority to the democratically elected leader, the Sikyong, or prime minister. He essentially ended centuries of the Dalai Lama's holding temporal political power.
Voluntarily giving up that kind of power. That's rare.
Very rare. A real act of democratic leadership.
Okay, so beyond the political journey, his spiritual teachings are what many people know him for. They seem quite universal.
Yes, his core message really resonates. It's fundamentally about genuine compassion and universal responsibility.
What does he mean by genuine compassion?
He emphasizes it's not just, you know, feeling affection for your friends or family. That's biased. True compassion is an unbiased wish for all beings, everyone, to be free from suffering.
All beings. That's a big scope.
Huge. And he links this to what he calls being wise selfish.
Wise selfish sounds like a contradiction.
A little. But his point is that our own long-term happiness, our own well-being, is actually deeply connected to the well-being of others, of the whole human family. So caring for others isn't just selfless. It's actually smart for ourselves, too. Enlightened self-interest, you might say.
I see. And this focus on compassion, sort of beyond religious specifics, led him to develop something quite innovative, right? This idea of secular ethics.
Exactly. That's one of his major contributions, I think. He proposes an ethical framework based on common experience, common sense, and even scientific findings about well-being, rather than relying on any specific religion.
So not tied to Buddhism necessarily.
Not necessarily. He calls it a hygiene of emotion, like physical hygiene keeps the body healthy, emotional hygiene cultivating inner values like tolerance, forgiveness, contentment keeps the mind healthy. It's designed for our pluralistic world, for believers and non-believers. The idea is to teach these values through education, right from kindergarten up.
Fostering peace from the inside out. It makes sense. His advocacy clearly had a global impact, earning him the Nobel Peace Prize. But now, there's a really serious issue looming over the future, isn't there? His succession.
Yes. It's a critical and, frankly, very politically charged issue. And there's a deeply worrying precedent.
What's that?
The case of the Panchen Lama. In 1995, the Dalai Lama recognized a six-year-old boy, Gedhun Choki Nima, as the 11th Panchen Lama, the second most important spiritual figure.
Okay.
Just 3 days after the announcement, Chinese authorities abducted the boy and his family. He hasn't been seen or heard from since. He's often called the world's youngest political prisoner.
That's horrifying. The stolen child.
Exactly. And then Beijing appointed its own Panchen Lama, who most Tibetans and Buddhists worldwide do not accept.
So given that chilling history, what is the plan for the next Dalai Lama? This must be a huge concern.
It is. The Dalai Lama himself has addressed it directly. Just recently, in 2025, he reaffirmed that the institution of the Dalai Lama will continue.
Okay, so it's not ending with him.
No. And he stated very clearly that the sole authority to recognize his reincarnation lies with his official trust, the Gaiden Fodrang Trust, not with any government.
And where might the next one be found?
He's indicated it's likely the reincarnation will be born in the free world outside of Chinese control.
But China claims the right to choose.
Yes. China insists it has the exclusive right to approve the next Dalai Lama, like they did with their Panchen Lama. This sets up a potential crisis. Two figures claiming to be the 15th Dalai Lama, one recognized by the Tibetans in exile and the Buddhist world, another appointed by Beijing. It's a major challenge for religious freedom.
A profound test indeed. So when we look back at his whole life, this simple monk, what's the lasting legacy?
It's immense, really. He took Tibetan Buddhism from being relatively isolated and made its core principles, compassion, mindfulness, nonviolence, accessible to the entire world, a global spiritual resource.
That's huge in itself.
Definitely. Then there's the political dimension. He built this resilient, democratic Tibetan community in exile against all odds. And finally, his unwavering advocacy for nonviolence on the world stage. He showed its power even when facing immense political pressure and oppression.
It really has been a life of incredible service. You get the sense his true inheritance isn't about territory or political power anymore, but about wisdom. This deep dive really highlights how profound change can come, not necessarily from titles, but from that deep commitment to inner values, to universal responsibility. It leaves you wondering, doesn't it? What insights about resilience, about leadership in the face of adversity, can you take away from his journey?